Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNC 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. My level of reading is someone's post on Facebook.
This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
So, you know, on social media, you'll see a lot of people saying, like, what gives you the ick? And yeah. a lot of the time it can be something relatively... benign, like it's someone, like one of them I heard was watching their partner carry a tray.
Yeah.
Which to me sounded bizarre, but I kind of get what they mean. It's that awkward kind of angle. In
this is where Megan pulls out an A4 fucking pad.
I have one for you. And it's very specific. It's not like that general thing that everyone necessarily does. It's you.
I don't do sniff seats anymore.
Well, no, that would be a massive ick. That would be...
the ick.
That'd be grounds to break up if you were still going around sniffing seats. Yeah. No, so the one I have for you, when you're doing your nails,
yeah,
you don't do your nails. You sit there and you pick at them and break them till they come off.
Rip them off.
Yeah. And then you have this little pile of nails on the table beside you.
Yeah.
Right? Now, I get you're putting them down.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're in the middle of, quote unquote, doing your nails.
Yeah.
It's the fact that you'll leave them there.
Well, no,
not always. Sometimes you clean them up and then it can be like an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours later and they're still sat there and you're finished.
Yeah, but I ain't gone near a bin.
No. You make the trip to the bin specifically for the nails.
Oh. Huh.
And you know what really pushes this for me? So if I am actually doing my nails and I'm filing them, you know, like when you file your nails, dust comes off them.
Yeah.
You're grossed out by that. You hate
because you do
that.
It in bed.
Not usually. I have done, and also if I ever have done it in bed, it's when the bedding's like going to get changed. You know what I mean? It's not like I would never do it in fresh bedding. But even if I'm sat at a table doing it, you're like, oh, it's disgusting. But you have this pile of like gnarled claws sat there, and that's all right. Go on. What have you got for me? I know you're going to throw one at me now.
I actually thought you would say something else. So Megan goes mad for this and I don't know why. But I'll like half take my socks off.
Oh, yeah.
And you go nuts.
He pulls them off so they're just hanging on the end of his toes and he'll sit there flapping it about. I don't understand it. I thought of another one for you.
Okay, here we go. This is the episode. No.
I thought of this as a topic for like a starter. And then I was like, I don't actually have one. Let me have a think of what I have for you. Now I've got a list. You're very dirty handed.
What do you mean?
So I wash my hands a lot. To my detriment, my hands are very dry all the time. I'm constantly putting moisturizer on.
Yeah, they're fucked.
But my hands are always clean. Now, Neil will say he cooks off some sausages or rashers, something greasy. Do you know what I mean? Oh, rashers. I don't know if Americans know what rashers are.
Bacon.
Rashers, yeah, bacon. You know, and Brits don't even say rashers, really. No. It's very annoying. Anyway, he'll cook off some rashers. And, you know, if you've touched it or anything, you get, like, immediately I'm washing my hands. Neil will get grease in his hands and then just, he'll touch the kettle, he'll touch the toaster, he'll touch the microwave, the air fryer, wherever it may be. And there's just grease. Like, if I go to it next and I put my fucking hand in grease, I will lose it. Lose the plot.
Well, don't do it on purpose.
Yeah, so your gnarled fucking claws hanging around. It's like living with a fucking cat.
Yeah.
And your dirty hands. Now. Oh, and your socks flapping about. Now, just had to get that off my chest.
Well, I have two for you.
Okay.
Both of them involve the podcast.
Okay.
You make my life harder for editing. So one is, it's not even the end of every sentence. It's in between words. You click your mouth.
Yeah, I have a very noisy mouth. I've noticed that.
Sometimes I've just left them in because there's that many.
Actually,
I can't do it.
I'm glad you've addressed that because I wanted to address something. The last episode, when I listened to back, I'm sorry, lads. I'm all over the place. It's really like popping the fucking peas in that episode.
Well, that's another one. Mic placement. Yeah. I keep telling you.
No, but that's you ever see me and you disagree when it comes to the audio. We've had some fucking scraps over it, but I apologize.
And the other one, which is on the podcast also, how many times you say like?
It's very bad. I am aware of that. Yeah.
It's literally like, say like more.
No, I know. It's horrible. I wish I didn't. I want to say like now. No, I wish. That's just kind of one of those weird, I think, I think it's just one of those weird comfort things when you speak. It's the same as all that.
Yeah.
You kind of just try to fill the sentence.
See, that's something when we first started and I was looking at tips on editing, because I've never edited audio before. And people were saying, take out the filler words.
Mm-hmm.
And I did for one episode and it just sounded so robotic.
Yeah, because it's just not how I speak.
So I left them in.
You say and shit like that a lot more, but I mean, not just me. I think it's very common with the Irish to say like all the fucking time.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
So we've got shout outs, haven't we?
We do indeed.
Who is it this week?
Well, first up, we have Emma. And Emma.
Oh, I've got one for Emma.
Well, Emma's name poses a bit of a dilemma. Because not much really rhymes with Emma.
Emmeroids.
No, did you not get the reference?
Huh?
That was a reference to Friends.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Fuck that one up.
That's rude now.
Emmeroids.
Emmeroids. I'm sorry, Emma. Neil's very proud of that one. He told me in advance. I'm going to call her Emmeroids.
Piles. So that's her nickname, Piles.
Piles. Wow.
Yeah, Piles. Farmer Giles. We'll call her Farmer Giles.
Farmer Giles.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry, Emma.
Thank you for the support.
Thank you. Next, we have Kelly. Kelly spelled without a Y.
Oh.
Not even an I, an IE.
Oh.
Kelly.
Kelly.
Kel. Not to be confused with Kelly Rowland. Any other Kellys? Can you think of any other Kellys?
Kelly Clarkson.
Kelly Clarkson. Yeah, it's also not Kelly Clarkson. There's another Kelly, but he's a very bad one. We're not going to mention him.
Oh, R. Kelly.
Well, I just said...
Kelly. It's R. Kelly.
See, the thing is, with your accent, that's fine. If my accent, no, no.
It's R. Kelly. There we go. That's her nickname, R. Kelly.
We're not doing... Do you know, this round of shout-outs is... it's not doing great, is it? But if you notice, the shout-outs have become more... derogatory.
Bullying.
Yeah.
But they want it.
They want it. Fucking the victim blaming here. Now, last but not least, we have Dallas. Yee yee. That's immediately what came to mind when I saw Yeehaw.
Yeah.
Dallas.
Yee yee.
That's some country name right there. We also we know Dallas's nickname.
Yeah. Yaya.
Yaya.
She couldn't speak when she was a kid. Is that what it was? She's like, yeah.
I don't know. Is it?
I don't know.
Well, what did you say? So, yes. Thank you for your support.
Yeah, so with Dallas, it's our first mother and daughter duo on the Patreon.
Yeah. You're right there. We're starting to get the families in. We're starting to indoctrinate people. Do you know
what I mean? The Irish do.
Yeah. It's actually quite fitting that you say that. What do you mean the Irish do it?
Everything's like family run and like everyone knows, everyone's related to everyone over here. So you work with your fucking relatives.
I would get offended by that, but I'm related to half the people in the area. I come from two very big families, and that's just on my dad's side of the family.
Yeah.
Never mind mother's.
And a father's father and his father's father's father.
What about them? You got something to say? No, it's actually interesting you say that about bringing families in and indoctrinating them into our community.
Yeah.
Because today we're going to be talking about cults.
Okay.
Yeah. So
you think our patrons are cult?
I mean,
you think the mortals is a cult?
I mean, it could be. It could turn into. I don't have any plans as of yet.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
But no, today we are going to talk about the cults of Donegal.
Well, that's just Donegal, isn't it?
What are you getting at? What are you slagging the Irish for yet again?
Well, it's not just the Irish. No, the Irish slag Donegal. They say there's nothing up there. The most boringest place.
I've never been to Donegal. When I was in secondary school, there was one girl in my class who was from Donegal and she just got slagged because she was from Donegal.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything. But since I moved over here, the only things I've heard about that area is it's shit. Nothing happens there.
Nothing.
Nobody's from there. That's what the Irish say.
Well, I've actually never been, so I can't say. I'm sure it's beautiful, though.
Why haven't you been? Because there's nothing to go and see?
I haven't actually been around Ireland a lot. Like, I've been to quite a few counties, but not gone to them for a weekend away or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I've just been through them kind of thing. So anyway, we're talking about cults or communities, religious movements, organizations, you know, whatever you'd like to call them. So to start with, let's talk about the Silver Sisterhood. The Silver Sisterhood, also known as the Rhenish Community, was a religious movement that moved to Ireland in 1982 from Yorkshire, England.
Of course they did. Are all cults religious?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
Sometimes it's more of a communal living situation. Not such a heavy emphasis on religion.
But you just call that a community, not a cult.
Yeah, but some of their views and the things they do can get a little bit intense and kind of, you have to live this way. A bit cultish, yes. They settled in the village of Burtonport, County Donegal. And around this time, there was just 7 members. They gave their house the name Andrehid Bio, which means the bridge of life.
Wait, can you just change your name of the property?
Yeah, if you want to, yeah.
So we could call ours the Bollock Inn.
I mean, Dublin. You could do. I mean, have you ever been down one of them streets where it's like, you know, 1, 2, 3, and in the middle of it is like Rose Cottage? And you're like, you've done that to
yeah,
be a dick.
Yeah, I've been a delivery driver.
Yeah.
I've found the struggle with it, yeah. Which I always thought, and this is going back to 2 of our Patreon members, I always struggled as a delivery driver. How do ambulances get on?
I don't fucking know. They need a medal. The Silver Sisterhood's views were set in a matriarchal belief that their god was a superior female being, who they worshipped as a mother, and believed that everything was created around her. Now, much like many other religious groups, music and chanting was a part of the worship of their god. Although heavily dominated by female membership, there had previously been male members. Quote, "Men are used to a position of privilege and power in a patriarchal society." So they were aware it might have been a bit of a shock for men to enter into the group.
When it's called Sisterhood.
Well, I mean, I think that's more just the title. I wouldn't get too, you know, caught up in that. But, you know, when it's suddenly very female dominated and their god is a feminine superior, you know what I mean? It's kind of, well, you know, they were hopeful. Now, members of the group were referred to as maids.
Slaves, then.
I mean, this is the title that they preferred to be called, but interestingly enough, men were just men.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay.
The group did decide to somewhat serve the community. They decided to open a gift shop, and, I mean, why not? Crafting was a big part of their lives. Even the musical instruments that they used to worship were handmade.
Like recorders?
More like drums and shit like that.
Oh. Why? Are
maybe I didn't see any in the footage I watched, but
triangle.
Possibly.
Get a metal bar and bend the fucker.
But I mean, that's what I was going to say. Even with a recorder, how difficult is it to make? I don't know.
But I think all the holes are the same size. It's just the position of them what gives it the different tones.
Yeah.
I don't
want to be an asshole and be like, oh, of course you could easily fucking bang out a recorder. But I don't know.
I don't know if it were the same in America. I don't even know if it's the same in Ireland. But anyone in the UK at infant school would play Three Blind Mice.
Hot cross buns. pretty similar, really, isn't it?
I bet my recorder is still at my parents'.
I fucking hated doing recorder. Why? Why was it recorder?
In fact,
every school,
I broke my first one.
By accident or by hitting someone with it?
Right. Well, I was in the infants. I wasn't like a feral child. I was sword fighting with someone else's recorder.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad we cleared that up. So they opened a gift shop. They also opened a tea room. They were fairly self-sufficient, growing their own food, not just to feed themselves, but to supply to others. And the food and drink that was prepared was done so without the use of any modern appliances. No electricity.
So they're basically, who are them who make their own butter?
Amish.
So basically they're Amish.
Yeah, not quite. But I see what you're driving at.
Because they like make their own butter and stuff. I saw that on Schitt's Creek.
Now, initially, the women, or maids, as they preferred to be called, dressed as maids, bonnets and all.
What?
Yeah.
You mean about a bonnet?
A bonnet, a hat.
All right, well, bonnet, straight away, I'm thinking a car bonnet.
No, do I need to show you a picture of it?
Well, maids don't wear hats. They wear one of them white, like...
A bonnet.
Tea holder.
Tea cozy.
Tea cozy, innit?
Okay, first of all, they don't wear a tea cozy.
Well, no, it's not tea cozy. What are them white things?
It's more like a headpiece kind of thing.
Okay. I'm thinking of what you put a teapot on. The, like, white...
Tea doily.
Yeah.
Is that what you're thinking of?
Yeah.
You think they'd balance a tea doily on their head? So, like I said, they dressed as maids, so they had the bonnets and all. They were, you know, they were doing their tea doilies, if you're Neil. But a few years down the line, the house was renamed St. Bride's after St. Bridget, and they started to dress in Victorian-era clothing. Around this time, they also opened a boarding school for women in their 20s and 30s to experience boarding school in the Victorian era.
Well, nothing good happens at a boarding school.
No, not so much. During their time running the boarding school, the women also use pseudonyms, and it becomes quite apparent why.
Might actually surprise you, but I actually know what pseudonyms are, and I actually know one. Mark Twain, the author, is a pseudonym.
You look so proud right now.
Did you know that?
I think I'd heard that, but I couldn't tell you what his name is.
It was... something to do with finding your location when you're on a ship, I think. That's what Mark Twain means.
Mm.
I'll look it up after, but I think I'm right.
In February of 1990, Miss Martindale, one of the two women who ran these classes, was convicted of assault. She had caned someone across the buttocks, and she received a 2-month suspended sentence and a £100 fine.
That's all for nothing. My dad used to get caned nearly every day.
Well, do you want me to make it a bit weird for you?
Okay.
Well, actually, no, hang on. Sorry. My dad used to get caned. These were adults.
Yeah.
What are you getting at here?
But they wanted the experience of a boarding school.
Your dad didn't go to boarding school.
No, he went to public school.
And he wasn't going to school in the Victorian times.
No.
And he wasn't a woman. In her 20s or 30s?
No.
So what the fuck are you talking about?
I must have got wrong end of the stick, but
wrong end of the fucking cane. It's what you'll fucking get if you keep up. Go on, did you want to continue?
A dent. Dent spec.
Now, here's where it gets a little bit weird. A little bit odd.
Okay.
The teacher, Miss Martindale, she claims that this was consensual. It seems a bit of a weird thing to say, doesn't it?
Consensual caning.
Yes. But according to reports, there was a another side to this school. Quote, bundles of sadomasochistic and lesbian magazines. Schoolrooms completed with blackboards, desks and canes. It really changed the tone of, quote, I must obey my mistress at all times, which was wrote across the blackboard. You see where you see what I'm driving at here?
Yes. You don't see blackboards anymore, do you?
I haven't been in school in years.
They're just the white marker boards. But when, like, I'm only 36, and when I was at infants and juniors, it was the big roller fucking blackboard.
Oh, no, we didn't have a roller. It was just fixed.
And I remember I put the board rubber right on the top of the blackboard.
Mm-hmm.
So when the teacher pulled it down to get a blank side, it come down and hit him on top of it.
They're fucking solid. Jesus, could have got a fucking concussion from that.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's taken a bit of a turn in this boarding school. Apparently, they've been advertising in adult magazines. For £75, both men and women could attend the residence to be disciplined.
I know these are from Yorkshire, but you Irish, that's normal, isn't it? For
what's normal?
For that religious thing, is it Lent? Where you give up something?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, where are you going with this?
I know I'm using Father Ted as a reference. But, like, they get dumped in ice baths and get dragged around by a tractor.
Yeah, it's like they have to repent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you do that anyway.
No. Like, it's not quite what you're getting at. So they were kind of trying to mask this as, you know, we're going to bring young women in and teach them how to be a lady. You know what I mean? They're going to get the experience of boarding school in a Victorian era. It's kind of... it's fun, but you're getting taught. And I mean, that was kind of just a front for sadomasochism. Like, it was more
okay.
Of a...
So it's not like walking around with books on your head.
I mean, they might have done that. I wasn't there. But, you know, there was definitely a more sexual side to this. And it actually led to the group being described as a fetish club. There was reporters who actually answered the ads and went to see what would happen.
Okay.
So aside from their crafts and tea room and schooling, another way for St. Bride's to raise money for their group was creating text adventure video games.
How's that a video game? Text.
Text adventure video games. Before we had the more modern of the actual full-on, all the graphics and everything that we see today, you would have text adventures.
Like word searches.
Have you never played them?
Do you mean like a word search?
No, like text would pop up on the screen and you'd go through the story kind of thing.
No.
That was the, like, no.
No.
Okay. So anyway, that's what they did. St. Bride's started making text adventure video games. And although they did not approve of modern technology, they argued that these games were fine because they required a level of concentration and commitment. I mean, the argument seems a bit thin to me. It sounds more like they got a whiff of money and sold out.
Yeah.
So some of the games they created include Bugsy, which was set in Chicago during Prohibition, and Jack the Ripper. You play as a suspect and you have to find the killer in order to clear your name. And this was the first to receive an 18 certificate. They also released a game called The Secret of St. Bride's, where you play as a schoolgirl, just kind of acting the bollocks, getting into hijinks type of thing.
Is it getting
into hijinks or getting up to hijinks?
I've never heard that saying. What's
hijinks?
The fuck is hijinks?
Like acting the bollocks, acting the idiot.
Larking about?
Yeah.
Say larking about.
You at school.
Okay.
In 1992, the group left Burtonport and relocated to Oxford. After leaving their home, magazines as well as other publications were found. They included far-right and anti-Semitic content. They'd also been in communication with the leader of the British National Party, John Tyndall, who had expressed his admiration for the group.
I bet he did.
So that's the Silver Sisterhood. Hope you enjoyed it. I don't really understand. I wish I could give you more information on them. It's all a lot and kind of getting thrown at you at different points. And you kind of feel like as soon as you're getting into it, you're jumping off elsewhere. But that's literally what they did.
Yeah, you kept trying to trip me up, like with hijinks. But at least I knew what pseudonym was.
Hijinks is not... That's not an unusual word, I don't think. Like, a lot of people have heard of hijinks.
No, never heard it in my life. And I've been around 6 years longer than you. But I didn't grow up with me head in books. My level of reading is someone's post on Facebook. And if it's a long one, what do? I pass it to you and go, read that, it's a long one.
You do, yeah. So that's the bulk of the Silver Sisterhood and their time here. But before that religious movement came to Donegal, there was the Atlantis Commune, or the Atlantis Foundation, the Atlantis Primal Therapy Commune, as they were known.
Just pick a name.
It's all variations, isn't it? You know what I mean? The first commune was established in 1970 by Jenny James in London. After facing controversy in the UK, she moved to Burtonport, County Donegal, 4 years later, and set up the Atlantis Commune.
Donegal again?
Yes.
Right, so anyone who says to me, no, it happens in Donegal, I can go, well, have you heard of Silver Sisterhood? And have you heard of the Atlantis, whichever name they go by?
Well, this is the thing that, like, fucks me up, right? Lived in Ireland my whole life. I only heard about this, like, these two communities, about 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah.
Why did no one tell me? I'm gonna have to fucking go to my mother. I'm going to go to my granny and go, did you know about this? So yeah, she moved the group to Burtonport, County Donegal, 4 years later and set up the Atlantis Commune. The name taken from the proximity to the Atlantic coast, as well as the legend of Atlantis. The commune lived in a three-story house dubbed the Atlantis House in the village, which had been decorated in an eye-catching manner. Bright colours and astrological signs covered the exterior walls. Now, not only was there two cults that lived in Burtonport within a short period of time, it was the same house that they had lived in.
Well, that's not a coincidence then.
It's a little bit odd, isn't it?
I've got another ick.
Oh, okay.
And this is something I don't know how to describe it to people listening. See, you're not doing it now. You've sat back because you're not reading. You're not presenting.
Okay.
You fucking do this.
I think it's like that's like a nervous thing or something. I don't know. Like,
elbows are out, fingertips are down, all touching each other.
Do you know what I look like? I look like a cult leader preaching. I'm trying to make my point.
If there's any Brit, because I don't think he was big in America, but if there's any Brit who has seen Norman Wisdom, Early Bird, and he's dressed as a vicar on the golf course, and he's doing that stupid thing with his hands.
You know, I don't even know where this came from. I don't even know where this came from. I noticed I started doing it maybe a couple months ago when I'm reading. I think it's if I'm getting nervous or if I get it's flustered. Neil's going to do a fantastic job editing this episode, but I keep fucking up my words. Sometimes it happens. You just have a bad episode. You just can't speak. And I think when I get nervous, I start doing something with my hands to, like, I don't know, almost distract myself. But, yeah.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNC 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
So, yeah, they moved into the same house. Well, should I say the Silver Sisterhood moved into the same house.
Yeah.
They came before. Jenny had bought this house for £12,000 with the help of her friends loaning her the money. £12,000. And I, you know, we'll post a picture of the house. It's fucking beautiful.
£12,000 won't even get you a deposit.
No. No, it's fucking insane. And like I said, we'll post a picture of the house. I'll show it to you. It's absolutely fucking beautiful.
Well, you said three-story.
But what I mean is, like, there's even space there and everything. It's not even, like, crammed in. You know, it's in a small village. It's beautiful.
Until it wasn't.
Jenny said that she moved the group to the village in Ireland, hoping that they would be able to go about their practices in peace. During this time, the group had about 30 members living together. Now, as you can imagine, it raised a few eyebrows among the people of Donegal. They were dubbed the Screamers due to their use of primal scream therapy.
Oh, God.
The practice was predominantly carried out in a room downstairs, which had been draped in fabrics hanging from the ceiling, and the floor was lined with cushions. And as you can guess from the name given to the group, they were quite a noisy bunch.
Do you know what freaks me out more than the screaming therapy? Have you ever seen them ones who do the laughing therapy?
Yeah.
They all look like psychopaths.
Yeah, it's a bit intense for me now. Do you remember that guy we used to work with?
Oh, I know what you mean. The Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He used to do scream therapy.
No, he didn't.
Yes. Yeah, he I was talking
I could see
to him.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was the one who he tried teaching me what intermittent fasting was. And I must have said 6 times while he was telling me, I know what it is. I've done intermittent fasting.
Well,
I know exactly what it is.
It wasn't just that. At the time, we were working overnight. So basically, what he meant was he just wasn't changing his meal plan schedule.
Yeah.
He was just eating at the normal intervals that he would have. He just wasn't eating through the night.
Yeah.
And he'd always sit down with a cup and he'd go, I'm just having my tea. That's all I need. I don't need any. I'm just having my tea. It's like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
Have your tea. Anyway, he was a strange one. I mean, he could have. You never know. He could have been in this group. He was a bit older.
Yeah.
He could have been knocking about then. Now, the fabrics and the cushions that draped the room, they didn't do much for soundproofing. In an interview with RTE, Jenny described their use of primal scream therapy as helpful and healthy. She described it as a counterpart to a society that, quote, puts a premium on the mediocrity and niceness, being sweet and being polite.
So is it going to turn out it's not scream therapy, it's someone screaming for their life because they're getting beaten?
No.
Oh.
Primal scream therapy was an idea that had been developed by Arthur Yanoff and was detailed in his 1970 book, The Primal Scream. Fans of his method included the likes of Mick Jagger, John Lennon, and Yoko Ono.
Yoko Ono? I've heard of him.
Her. John Lennon's missus.
Okay.
The focus of the practice is to prevent or release repressed emotions, particularly the repression of painful childhood memories. The group used this premise and applied it in a more everyday manner, promoting extreme emotional honesty. The problem is, Jenny wasn't a qualified therapist, leading some ex-members to feel as though she did more damage than good and actually caused them further trauma. But this didn't seem to bother Jenny, and her answer to this was, if people didn't like the confrontation during the therapy, they knew where the door was. The sessions could become fairly aggressive in that it wouldn't just be, you know, letting out a scream, you know, the way you or I might let out a sigh at the end of a day. It wasn't just a more intense version of that. But they might become somewhat physically confrontational towards each other.
Like a mosh pit.
Well, I wasn't there, I can't. Others in the area described them as being a nuisance and that they would keep people up at night with their screams. Now, I did watch a clip of one of their, I don't know, confrontations. And it was just awkward. So there's this one woman called Sally, and she is going off saying how much she hates Becky. And Becky's just sat there and she literally turns to one of the other women and says, I don't know what to do. She's going nuts. Sally's telling Becky, you're a bitch. I hate that you're prettier than me. I hate that you have more boyfriends than me and all this. And she's like, whoa. All right. Calm down, Sally.
Tell you what, if we get to 200 patrons, we'll go to one.
No, the fuck I won't. You can go. I'm not going near that shite. Look, here's the thing though. I do think it's good to talk things through and feel your emotions.
Yeah.
And I also think it's completely fine to feel angry and express it. But it's about how you express it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Just be normal and punch a wall.
Well, no. Yeah, I was literally about to say you can't just go around screaming, shouting and fucking wrecking the gaff. But I don't know. They just seem to look at it as it's good you're getting it out. It doesn't matter if you're causing someone else trauma. It seems.
Yeah.
It's you're getting it out. We all have to be okay with this.
Yeah, like I've been around people who actually punch walls. And I don't mean like interior drywall. I mean stone walls and brick walls. And it's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, Is it self-harming? I don't understand. I mean, like, I just need to get the anger out. And it's like, that's a brick fucking wall.
I mean, if it's getting to that level, possibly.
I'd say it's more self-harming.
Yeah. I mean, it could be like Mike in Jersey Shore when he headbutts a cement wall and then he goes, I didn't realize it was cement. I did it just to look bigger than I am.
Yeah. Nearly knocked himself out.
But, you know, back to the point of this, you know, if you're screaming and shouting and, you know, just fucking letting it all go at someone, how are you then meant to continue living harmoniously in this group setting when you've just said the most, you know, you think that a person's the most vile, disgusting, whatever.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Now, the group also put a great deal of importance on physical labor and believed in a life free of technology, and their goal was to be as self-sufficient as possible. Some of their beliefs included, of course, this particular therapy method, being politically involved, no formal schooling, and sexual freedom for children.
Understandably.
What?
No, I'm being sarcastic.
Okay, you said that as if... What?
No.
That seems a bit vague in description.
Yeah.
You know, what exactly... Does that mean their sexual orientation and you believe that there's no judgment whatever?
Yeah.
I mean, it could mean that. Eh.
Probably not.
Jenny said, quote, "We don't set an age at which a child is a sexual creature. If they want to sleep with each other at 9 or 10, that's fine."
So they didn't mean that then. They weren't being open about
Your gay. Sexual orientation, whatever. Yeah. Not great. Not great. And then I also feel like even because she says sleep with each other at that age. Yeah.
So it's not just kids.
No, that's what I'm saying to you. She says it as if it's other kids sleeping with each other. Never even mind the complicated conversation around that.
Yeah.
I feel like that opens the door for an adult.
Yeah.
To be like, there's no defined age at which.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So not great.
No.
The group had a free love way of living. In one of her books on the topic of male sexuality, Jenny recommends sleeping 3 to a bed, 2 men and 1 woman. She also shared her stud theory, which is that she believes men are only of use for sex and chopping wood.
What?
That's Jenny.
I can cook. I can clean.
I don't know if the stud theory is a thing. I don't know of it, or if it's this is Jenny's specific theory. I don't know. But there you go. All this time you thought you were a podcaster. Apparently you're only good for sex and chopping wood.
I ain't even got an axe.
So you're failing.
So I'm A for stud. Fuck Jenny.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. They were just talking about maids, you know, the last group we talked about.
Yeah.
I don't own a bonnet. I'm failing as well.
Fuck Jenny.
Yeah, I think some of her views are a little bit out there. Jenny states herself that there are no successful relationships that resulted from the commune. Which, I mean, I suppose that depends on your own definition of a successful relationship.
Yeah.
But she goes on to say that they didn't have happy people coming to them. That's why they were there, because they had problems and needed help.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say that they indoctrinated the more vulnerable members of society into their group to further their agenda.
You could say.
But who knows?
You could say that she's that out there, Nathan and his thick glasses can't even see her.
How did I know? I didn't think it would come back around that quickly. Now, their house became known to the locals. It was sort of, you know, the weirdos over there, stay away from them.
Yeah.
So far from what we've learned, I mean...
You would be petrified if you lived in that area.
I mean, this is a...
If you had kids as well.
This is a small village in the 70s.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So...
You imagine you live there and you've got kids. You'd be petrified for him to even leave the house.
Yeah. Well, the government agreed with you on that one, Neil, because members of the government would actually eventually call for the deportation of the group. In 1976, they received bomb threats after they were accused of abducting a woman. In 1978, a documentary titled The Family was made for RTE about the commune, although it was deemed too disturbing to be broadcast and was not released until the 90s.
And then they got rid of him and brought Tuvarin in.
What?
And then they got rid of him and then they brought the Tuvarin in.
Well, they weren't bringing anyone in. These fuckers were moving here of their own accord. In 1980, the commune relocated to the island of Innisfree, just off the coast of Donegal. While there, they rented 3 cottages, as well as some land for their goats and cows.
To make the butter.
Could have been.
And cheese.
Cheese. They were, I mean, they were also the same as Silver Sisterhood in that they were trying to be self-sufficient.
Yeah, independent.
By 1989, Jenny decided it was time to move on from Ireland and set her sights on South America. Her goal was for them to make their way to Bolivia, but they ended up settling in Colombia.
Are they out of their mind? Colombia, they chopped the fucking head off over there for that sort of carry-on. That's a fair fucking point. They wouldn't stand for it.
Yeah, they didn't end up living in the safest environment while in Colombia. But Jenny said, quote, "I thought it was time to cut the umbilical cord with all Western civilization. My goal was to go back and back to a more natural way of life."
How'd that work out for her?
Well, once Jenny saw Colombia, she said, quote, "I was completely seduced. Colombia had something so vibrant. It's a country which has everything." Which, you know, I've heard Colombia is beautiful. It could well be the case.
Also has a lot of violence.
Or it could be that they wanted somewhere more isolated, somewhere remote where they weren't going to be under scrutiny.
Yeah.
I mean, there does seem to be a bit of a pattern here. From London, a major city, they moved to Burtonport, Donegal, with a population of 300, then to the island of Innisfree, and then moved to a remote area of Colombia, which is surrounded by FARC.
What?
FARC, it's guerrillas.
Okay.
Rebels.
I thought you were being rude at me then.
No, FARC is rebels.
Okay. Well, you don't want to be fucking surrounded by rebels.
No, you don't. While in Colombia, members of the group reached to about 60, and they now lived on a 200-hectare farm. At this point, they were pretty much self-sufficient and heavily focused on ecological issues. They not only grew their own crops, but would tour schools teaching about ecological farming techniques. They also expanded their operation to include a second farm. One of the members of the commune, Anne Barr, said, quote, "We lived in tranquility for a long time. People came out of curiosity to see what these crazy gringos were doing, because we were in an area where there shouldn't be foreigners." Which, the area that they were living in was Icananzo, and like I mentioned, you know, with FARC, it was guerrilla territory.
Right.
So, this community are living among rebels, which, whether they were wise to believe this or not, they took some comfort in it.
They're fucked.
Well, see, they felt as though they were protected by the rebels. But with that, you gotta play by their rules.
Yeah.
In 1991, 4 masked armed robbers stole 1 million pesos, which was roughly £700 at the time, from the commune. The guerrillas found the men who had done this, made them return the money with interest. So they were getting some protection from the rebels.
Okay.
But things took a turn in 1998. The commune were told to leave their second farm over fears from the rebels that they were spies among their visitors. The 15 remaining members were asked to leave. Quote, "We had very good relations for a while. It never really entered our heads that there would be physical danger."
Now put down and piss off.
Basically. On the 9th of July in the year 2000, 19-year-old Tristan James, the grandson of Jenny, had planned to return to Ireland. But before travelling back over, he wanted to visit his family, a half-brother named Brendan, who had been adopted into another family. He and his friend Javier, who was also 19 years old, were abducted by rebels in a village not far from Icananzo. They'd been accused of leading spies into the area. They were held for a day and given a mock trial, before having their throats slit and were then decapitated. Their bodies were doused in petrol and then burnt. Their remains would later be found in a mass grave.
Fucking hell.
Following this, Brendan's birth father took him out of the country. Brendan's adoptive family were also murdered for speaking out about the deaths of Tristan and Javier. His family said of the murders, quote, "We just never imagined that something could happen to our group." It seems a betrayal of Tristan to say this, but Colombia is our home. We feel more rooted there than ever, because once your blood is spilt somewhere, you have a link to it. The deaths of Tristan and Javier rocked the Atlantis community. Some members left over the reality that this was in fact an incredibly dangerous area to be living in, and as some of the younger members began to enter adulthood, they decided they wanted to leave and start their own lives. In 2020, the BBC aired a documentary titled The Downfall of the Screamers. Faye Planer spent a week with Jenny James and her daughter on their current farm in Colombia. By 2020, Jenny was pretty isolated compared to her time spent within the commune. Jenny's described herself as being, quote, "suicidally lonely following the exodus of her former followers." Another member of the commune still lives close by to Jenny, although they are no longer on speaking terms. And that's the sus with the Atlantis commune. So for them, it really, really went downhill. And actually resulted in the murders of two young men.
Yeah. But like, even someone who's not as bright as me straight away was like, you don't live amongst rebels.
Yeah, but this is a 19-year-old boy who knew no different, probably.
Yeah.
You know, Jenny, she knew better. She knew/knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
Tristan, on the other hand, he's 19.
Yeah.
You know?
And his mate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird one because he'll have been born into it, so he won't know any different, but I don't know what to think of it.
Well, there's still a fair amount of mystery that remains around these two communities. And I feel like the more you find out, the more you're questioning. I think particularly when it comes to St. Bride's, whether it's the kind of BDSM side of it or the video game side of it, considering they don't like technology.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, okay, here's this little grain of information. Now give me more.
Yeah.
And that's kind of it. And then they fuck off back to Oxford and you're like, all right, okay, well, just leave us all over here in Ireland. Shook. Yeah, no, I do wish I could tell you more, but I feel like a lot of what I was reading was opinion based. And it seems to be a lot of speculation as to what exactly was happening in that house in Burtonport.
Yeah.
But none of us can say for absolute certainty.
But it wasn't good.
I'm going to say not. Not good. But that's the cults of Donegal.
Fuck them.
Who'd have thunk it? Huh? In that beautiful little fishing community.
So like I said earlier, next time an Irish person says to me, no one goes to Donegal, nothing happens in Donegal, I can say to him, well, did you hear about the two cults?
Yes. Lads, here's your not party piece. What is it? Like your nah, fuck it, party 15 piece.
15-minute fame.
Yeah.
Fame.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Right, so oddity.
Imo Koifunen.
You're what?
Imo Koifunen was a Finnish soldier who went on a little adventure.
Okay.
To say the least. So on the 18th of March, 1944, Imo and his fellow soldiers were ambushed by Soviet soldiers.
I won't call that an adventure.
That's just the first fucking line. Just you wait. They were able to flee the surrounding soldiers on skis, and Imo, who was tasked with guiding this patrol, was understandably exhausted after this. A lot of fucking adrenaline going, obviously physical capability. He was also carrying their entire supply of pervitin, which, if you don't know...
Pervitin.
What?
Pervitin.
Pervitin.
Okay.
Which, if you don't know, is methamphetamine. This was commonly given to soldiers in order to give them a boost when needed.
I bet it fucking did.
Although Imo was actually against taking drugs, he knew that they were desperate at this point. The only problem is, he doesn't just take the recommended dosage. He takes 30. He didn't actually mean to take a load of them. He said that, you know, they become stuck together, you know, because of the weather and everything.
Fuck off.
And they'd fallen out the packet. So he like tipped the packet, came out, he took it.
Bollocks.
That's his story and he's sticking to it. Also, bear in mind, he's wearing gloves. It would have been a bit fiddly and, you know, he didn't... Imo didn't have time to fuck about in this situation.
Yeah.
So he just, you know... So as you can imagine...
He was off his tits.
Imo was now absolutely off his fucking ticks. Imo was absolutely off his fucking tits, absolutely bombing it through the snow. And they do manage to escape the Soviet troops.
I bet he fucking did. He'll have been like fucking Flash Gordon.
But... He also escaped his fellow soldiers. They couldn't keep up with him. So they had fallen behind. And during this, you know, his vision starts to become blurry and he's starting to lose consciousness. The following day, he wakes up. He's on his own, no ammo, no food, and he's travelled over 100 kilometres. And he's still high as fuck at this point, might I add.
I thought you were going to say he woke up and he was in Fiji.
So what does Imo do you think?
Sets up camp and waits for his teammates to catch up.
No, he keeps skiing. So during his travels, he ran into Soviet troops multiple times and he also skied over a landmine causing it to explode. Now, he was injured, but he did survive, taking shelter in a ditch and waiting for help. Quote, I started to look at the leg, which looked very bad. The bones were sticking out. And the muscles looked like they had been torn with a crowbar.
Fucking hell.
He was also experiencing hallucinations, and he said he would keep seeing an old friend appear to chat with him before disappearing again. The meth had also suppressed Imo's appetite up until now, but, you know, he did eventually need to eat. With not a lot of options on the menu, Imo had been surviving on pine buds until he managed to catch a Siberian jay, which he ate raw.
Fucking hell.
Desperate times, desperate measures. Eventually, Imo was rescued after a plane flying over spotted the site of the explosion, and from there he was taken to hospital. So, while in hospital, they give him the once over. His heart rate was measured at 200 beats per minute, and his weight was at just 94 pounds.
Fucking hell.
Through his ordeal, Imo had survived hunger, an explosion, sub-zero conditions, substantial amounts of methamphetamines, and skied over 400 kilometres.
Fuck that.
It's fucking insane. Although Imo did have to learn to walk again after the injury to his leg, his son said that his father did not appear to have been traumatised from his experience, although he did lose a toe.
He wasn't traumatised.
No. Like, I mean, I'm sure there must have been some level, but his son said overall he seemed okay. It didn't seem to be...
Just happy to be on.
It kind of, from what I gather.
Yeah.
Quote, even now, as an old man, when I think about this skiing, I shudder. How did I manage? Because it must have been tough. She's like, oh, that's a thinker. How did I do that? Never mind the meth, you know? In 1966, Imo married his partner, Elsa. They would go on to have 9 children together.
Fucking hell.
9. Fucking steady on.
You can put her down, Imo.
Imo passed away on the 12th of August, 1989, at the age of 71. Well, that's a full fucking life, that is. You know?
It's a full fucking household.
9. Oh my God, I'm tired just thinking about it. How's that, Grubby? I thought you'd enjoy that one.
Yeah, it's...
It's actually a listener suggested this. Liz suggested this. And I was like, okay, first of all, that's a great fucking story. Second, Neil's going to love this.
Yeah, it reminds me of my mate, Adrian Cart Noir.
Yeah.
Yeah. We covered him on
Yeah, well, we'll probably cover him for an oddity as well.
Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah. So what do you think of that then?
I would have give up.
Oh yeah, I would have, hands down, straight away.
The overdose on meth, get fucked. You took took it by accident. 30 of them.
from how it was kind of described, it's kind of like they had like kind of formed into one. And then he was obviously frantic, fumbling, grabbed the packet, opened it, tipped it out. That came out. I'm taking that. Like I said, whether you want to believe his story or not. But I want to, because otherwise he's a bastard just taking the entire supply, you know?
No, I think he was a bit of a drug fiend.
He was against drugs, though, up until that point. Allegedly. Yeah. Allegedly. I bet he is now.
Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.